The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another UAB Director's Chair. He is Mark Ingram to the left-hand side of the YouTube channel here in our brand new Tony Curry YouTube channel, of course, wherever you hear this show on every major indice. You can podcast this show if you don't want to watch. I don't know why you wouldn't want to see these two big, beautiful faces here, Tony Curry and Mark Ingram. Why? We call it the UAB Director's Chair because, of course, he is the UAB Athletic Director. Mark, how you been, brother? What's going on?
I'm excellent. Tony, how you been?
A little pep in your step after this past ball game. UAB had dropped four straight, and, of course, they come out of the barn on fire. I'm not sure how many yards they put up. I didn't look, but 56-35, and, of course, you had your Children's Hospital game going on as well, and it was just a fantastic win. Everybody was happy after that victory.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and you know, that team is what I feel like we've been watching for the last couple of weeks, you know, against Georgia and Tulane, improving, but didn't have a win to show for that improvement. So, you know, anytime you talk about that, it totally sounds like an excuse, right? Oh, we're getting better. But we were. And I'm so happy for them and obviously the program and our fans, but really happy for the players and the coaches to get that win to demonstrate, see, I knew it. We were getting better, and they did. So yeah, that was a ton of fun, and really, you know, the game wasn't as close as the score indicates. And I don't say that to beat up on South Florida, but you know, we put all of our starters on both sides of the ball almost the entire fourth quarter, and so yeah, we gave up three touchdowns. I think it was three in the fourth quarter, but and scored one to win by 14. But I mean, we were up by I think it was 28 points yeah. at the start of the fourth, and that's why we did that. And so, a big win and certainly a decisive win and fun to watch.
An interesting matchup this weekend against a team that's also got a losing record. They're 2-3 and UTSA, and we know about UTSA, and they're actually favored by 9.5 in this game, a team that's only lost a couple of games by one score. And so this team is much better than their record at 2-3. The only thing I would be a little concerned about is UAB has given up 35-plus points in their last five ball games. Offensively speaking, yeah, they put 21 up against a Georgia squad who's got lights out, a great defense, and we know they're going to score. But defensively speaking, where's this football team out?
Yeah, well, San Antonio ought to be favored. I mean, you're talking about the back-to-back Conference USA champion. We're playing at their place, which is really loud. The Alamo Dome is really loud. Their crowd should be good. It's a night game. That will be helpful for them to get numbers there. We do better, you know, at night, particularly with our students, which is, again, where a lot of the noise comes from. And they've beaten us the last 2 years. I mean, they ought to be favored, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of respect for what they've done. Their coach is really, really good. Their quarterback is fantastic. He had a great – he met the two games that – I think they've lost three games. Yeah, Houston, Tennessee, and Army. Mm-hmm. But their quarterback did not play against Army or Tennessee. And I don't know if the outcome would have been different. But just, you know, when you're looking at their record, you got to know the full picture there. Yeah, they lost to those two teams, but they didn't have their starting quarterback, who's probably the best quarterback in the league, or considered going into the season was considered the best quarterback in the league. I think Jacob Zeno is playing fantastic football. But again, going into the year, he basically was unmeasured against a guy who's a veteran there in San Antonio. Is really efficient, really hard to get on the ground. He's a good runner. Just, again, does a lot of really good things. So it's a tough game for us. There's no question about it. You know, defensively, again, as I mentioned, talking about the South Florida game in particular, we gave up 35 points, but again, we let them, they scored three touchdowns in the fourth against our second string. So I don't really, it's kind of like almost like San Antonio and their quarterback, a little bit of an asterisk there mm-hmm. on how many they scored. Tulane scored on basically the last play of the game, a touchdown. It was 28 points and then right there, you know, to get to 35. So not quite, you know, not quite that, but I mean, look, the facts are what they are. They scored and we didn't. So, I think our defense played a ton better against South Florida. Again, look at the first three quarters of that's our defense that you're worried about or concerned about or asking about is what did we do the first three quarters? And we played really good football defensively, and we gave our offense great field position. We had some takeaways and gave our offense great field position to then go look really good. Not taken away from the offense either, but a lot of the offensive success is credited, should be credited to how well the defense played.
UTSA, the game's at 7 o'clock coming up this Saturday night. And again, favored by about 9.5, should be a nice game for UAB, and love to see them improve again and perhaps get to their third victory this season. He's Mark Ingram, UAB director's chair. We've talked a lot of NIL on the show, and I know that I have to ask you these questions, but it's always fluid and developing. An NCAA subcommittee in charge of examining the rules that dictate how athletes use their name, image, and likeness rights to make money are meeting a little bit later on this afternoon. The notes on this particular thing, potential changes that would give schools the clearance to find deals for athletes, review contracts, help them by preparing taxes, provide resources such as cameras or graphic designers for athletes to complete their end of marketing deals. The proposed changes have not been finalized. It's not clear if and when these guidances would be adopted, but the changes would potentially eliminate some of the uncertainty about how much athletic departments can help athletes seen in the first 2+ years of college sports NIL era. I know you know about this meeting going on today. What's your thoughts on this? And it sounds like it's a good thing that the athletic department can be more involved in this NIL situation, but it's also more resources that you're letting go too. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, I'm great with most of it, and most of it really, Tony, we're already doing. Like, we're already trying to help kids with taxes in terms of like financial literacy education. But we're not processing their taxes. We're not doing their taxes. We're not hiring an accountant to do their taxes. I don't know if this legislation would allow that. I'm not in favor of that. Nobody hires anybody to do my, you know, I help. If I need help with my taxes, I either do it or I ask for help, which I pay for. I think there's some owners that I think the student athlete has to have some ownership here. But we're doing things like financial literacy. We have a place where a kid could go take photographs if they want. I don't know that we use it for that purpose. We do it for our own internal purposes in recruiting and our own backdrop for photo shoots that we do with our existing team, you know, for our media guide and that sort of thing, game program, website, that kind of stuff. But we have that space. So a lot of it is not that hard or that different. The part about being able to help them get deals is good and bad. So the good part is right now, you know, the NCAA, a very popular term, you know, when you see an infractions case, is lack of institutional control. Mm-hmm. If you are found to have a lack of institutional control in a particular area, that's kind of the most damning thing that the NCAA can hit you with. That term is something we're all afraid of, lack of institutional control. That basically means like, I'm not paying any attention or doing what you're doing over there, and I don't have any idea. No, it's not a big deal. That's kind of what it suggests. NIL, the rules that exist around NIL right now, to me, put us in a position to have a lack of institutional control because it's required. Yeah. You can't have institutional control. And so it is opposite what how we've governed ourselves, our entire existence with the NCAA, you know, as an organization, which is all the schools. And so I'm in favor of having some oversight to make sure that it's, you know, there's not anything, you know, crooked. I'm not sure what crooked is anymore on that topic, but we've got to have, I'm in favor of us having some oversight. What then I get concerned about. So here's the downside. It's always a dark side. Of the big budget schools, now they're going to hire a whole team of people to try to go get deals for people.
Sure.
Right. And so there's only so much money in the marketplace. You know, how much money is there in the marketplace? NIL collectives are already competition for the athletic department. So you have, and tell me what's more important. You get a fan who says, if we don't give to NIL, we're going to lose that player, or we got to have great players, or we're not going to have a good team. I agree with that. And then the season goes around, and we had that great season. Well, if we don't pay that coach, we're going to lose that great coach. What are we going to do? Well, you gave the money to the player. Remember, we gave all that money to the player? So that money that we wanted to give the player, the fans, or whomever gave it to the player instead of the department, now I don't have the money to go pay that coach that you say we also can't lose. So what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
So it is some talking heads and those who have microphones and access to one every day act like that doesn't exist, you know, and They kind of want to say, I don't know if you've seen, it's sort of a back and forth between the AD at Arkansas, whose name is Hunter Yurecek, mm-hmm. who's a great guy and a great friend. He's been back and forth with Jay Billis. And Jay Billis thinks these players ought to make money and all this. And I would love for Jay Billis to maybe offer his compensation to help pay those players. I think that would be a great idea. He's not yet offered that. But, you know, Hunter Yurecek has said, Jay, why don't you come to Fayetteville and let me show you our books and let's walk through this so you can really understand how we operate. Of course, Jay grandstands and says, you know, that's nonsense. And I don't feel sorry for you. And you pay these coaches all this money. Again, Jay probably makes as much as those coaches make just to talk about basketball. And I'm just like, you know, what people don't understand, they want to say that the fans are only cheering for the players. And it would kind of sound silly to say that the players aren't important. Of course the players are important. They're the ones on the floor or on the court or on the field. Of course they are. But, you know, fans, if I use Jay's alma mater, let's talk about Duke, and I can't name all the players because they've had so many of them. But, you know, people who love Grant Williams, yeah, they love Grant Williams, and they went to Duke games. And then when Grant Williams left, did they stop going?
No.
Because they have faith that the university, their school, their team, have faith that they've hired a coach, Mike Krzyzewski, is going to go find another one. They don't even know who that person is, and that he'll recruit and develop that player to produce similar talent and recruit other players to complement that talent to produce wins. They didn't stop going because Grant Williams left. Grant was awesome. I mean, you're talking about an all-star. And so who deserves more, the player or the coach? I mean, the coach who has an awesome responsibility, which is recruiting, first of all, identifying, recruiting, and then once they get them, they got to train them. They got to help them, you know, their academic health. And there's all sorts of compliance issues. They've got all these media obligations and fan obligations and, you know, coaching and training and managing the team and game planning and scheming against. And they're once they ultimately, when the players don't perform, no one blames the players. They blame the coach, right? So I just don't subscribe to the players ought to make the same money. The players are moving on, and they don't have the same risk that the coaches have. And by the way, again, the coaches every single year add to their years of experience. And the players, it's that old line, the Matthew McConaughey line in Dazed and Confused, I get older and they stay the same age. The players stay the same age. As the coach's experience level increases, the players is the same. And I'm not trying to devalue the players. I just think we've made a mistake in devaluing what we already provide the players. And it's 100% risk on the athletic department and the coach. That's where all the risk is at.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know what you asked me anymore, man. But I just think that
I answered it.
You asked me about the, you know, oversight of the collectives. There's just so much we got to get our arms around, and that, like, whether it's Congress or the media or whomever, like, we got to understand we're kind of losing our way in what we're trying to do.
Will this alleviate us from needing collectives? Because this collectives kind of came out. There is nothing to me that sounds or feels right about a collective. It just doesn't. It's a third party that comes in, and I can't tell you what portion of the money they're taking. It is. So
we've got one.
Yes.
We have one, and I pray they're successful. I want them to be successful. But it's like, if there was a way, and I don't know if there is or isn't, you know, people love to talk about things that I don't understand. They'll start talking about, I don't know, various laws and things that I'm not qualified to even speak to. But I bet there's not anybody in the country. If we said, look, we're going to eliminate collectives, and anything that looks or sounds like a collective, you can't have that anymore. I don't think there's anybody, if you ask them publicly, if you ask the high profile coaches and ADs and even myself publicly, would you like to get rid of them? We'll go, no, we should never do that. You get us behind closed doors and we would vote unanimously to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And so, because even the ones that are most successful see how problematic it is. And when you, I don't know if I talked about this on one of our previous episodes, I've got a really good friend that I used to work with who's he has at times been rated the number one recruiter in college football. He's a, still an assistant at an SEC school. And, I asked him about it, and he said, man, he said, you know, we used to work together. We worked together a couple of times. And he said, he goes, you know how I am. He goes, people want to say that I cheat. He goes, you know, I don't cheat. I just outwork everybody, and I out relationship everybody, which I agree with. And if he did cheat or does cheat, I was never aware of it. And he, so he was incredibly good at it if he did, but people blamed him for that because he would get so many good players. And which is always an easy thing to do, right? You're better than me. You must be cheating. And so he's like, man, it used to be about relationships. I'd build a relationship with a kid and their parents and their coach and everybody around them. Their janitor would know me. Their, you know, their guidance counselor would know me and all these people. And he said, and so players show up. You recruit all these high-level players who've never not started. Then they get to your big-time program, and there's other big-time players, and they don't start.
Yeah.
Or they don't play as much as they might. And they, it's not wrapped up in a neat little bow. He's like, if you have a relationship with that player and they come in all down and depressed, you, hey, man, you're a true freshman. You got to relax. That guy's going to be an All-American. He's a first or second round draft pick. And you're going to be that too. But he was in your shoes. You got to recognize this progression. You're going to get everything that you want to get. You're going to be everything we said you're going to be, but we have other guys that are also that. And so just take a deep breath. And if you have a relationship with the player and their parents and the coaches and all that, it works.
Yeah.
Cause you trust, you build trust. And but now when I come to you and I go, Tony, we're going to pay you $100,000 and we just want you to come to our school and we're going to pay you $100,000. And then you go, oh man, coach, that's great. Well, the school down the road says they're going to give me 110. Okay, we'll give you 115. Well, now this other school's entered the picture, and they're going to give me 120. Okay, we'll give you 125. Well, the other school said now they'll give me one. So now you're in a bidding war. Mm-hmm. And then what he said was, and he goes, and now you got to start asking yourself, do you even want to win?
Yeah.
Do you even want to win that? Because now, okay, so they choose you. You win. And so you get the player, but it's totally transactional. You pay the player. And again, that doesn't mean they're going to start. They're playing behind other great players. And so now you don't have a real trusting relationship. Your relationship was totally based on a transaction. They're not happy. They're in the portal to go get their second payday.
Yep.
He's like, you know, he goes, it's just you can't really develop people. And so a lot of coaches are starting to recruit the portal because, and even if they're paying them, to get in the portal, Tony will pay you. If you get in the portal, we're going to pay you this, which is illegal, but that's all that is happening. I mean, we got guys from our team that are now starting in big time places. They got paid to get into the portal and they got paid and whatever. And so, but once you're in the portal, you've transferred. You can only transfer and play immediately once. You can petition, but like, it's hard to get that waiver on the second time, the second transfer. If you didn't have a coaching change or like a real, both my parents were killed in a car accident. I need to go back home to be with my siblings, you know, like a real, real tragedy, which you obviously are not hoping for. Right. But I mean, that's what coaches are recruiting the portal, which is crushed high school recruiting. Because they know you're kind of locked in now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Now we're developing you and trying to make you what we thought you could be.
He's Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director. This is the UAB director's chair. You can hear it at least five times a week right here on the TKR app. Get the TKR app. There's three letters. You're good to go on Android or Apple. And of course, also watch us here on the YouTube channel, Tony Curry Radio, TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. If you want to send some email questions, we'll answer those right here on the show as well. Can you talk briefly about financial literacy? You brought that up a little bit earlier in your answer. What exactly does that entail? I mean, I see Deion Sanders' son, quarterback, who's driving a $200,000 vehicle. And I'm just thinking to myself, you're getting all these thousands of dollars thrown at some of these players. I remember what I was like when I was 18, 19, and 20. My mom and dad were still doing my taxes. But just talk a little bit about what UAB does for their student athletes when it comes to financial literacy.
Yeah, we have a great partnership with Regions Bank right here locally. And they send representatives over here. We've got great relationships with a number of the banks, but Regions is who provides this for us. And they come in and they meet not just with our student athletes, but any interested staff. And the conversation is mainly around taxes. It's understanding that, hey, when somebody said they're going to pay you $100,000, you understand you don't have $100,000, right? You know, trying to help them understand what tax bracket that would put them in and how much are they actually going to take home. So you don't have $100 to go spend. You have, you know, based on however much money they may be making, you know, here's roughly the percentage of money. Here's what you actually have. And you've got to be, you know, do you know what a W-2 is? Do you know what a, you know, what are I-9 forms? And just trying to have some conversation with them that they probably, have not had before. And so, and understanding where the resources are to get tax help and how to do that. And, you know, whether it's using TurboTax or whatever, but some people are helping, some, what I would call true NIL, you know, deals are they're some of these partners are trying to help also with that by withdrawing taxes on the front end before they pay them. So we just sort of explain that. I mean, that's at a high level, that's what it is. It's a tax conversation.
Gotcha.
To help them not get to a place where they, wait a minute, they said, you know, I got $100. I went and spent $100. What? Because I can't help them with that.
Yeah.
When they owe the government $25,000, $30,000, I can't help them with that.
Yeah. You're a classic rock guy. Let's get serious here. Big show this past weekend, Saturday in Indio, California, where they have Coachella. It was a show that a lot of people didn't think was going to happen because it was such huge names, Iron Maiden, Guns N' Roses, AC/DC, Ozzy Osbourne, who, of course, bowed out in place of Judas Priest. A lot of people love that. Tool and Metallica played on Sunday night. 84,000 fans spent at least $599 and then some. Some were like $6,000 or $7,000 packages if you wanted to stay on premise, and it was evidently just a killer, all six bands this past weekend. But on Friday night, to kick off the show, Iron Maiden and Guns N' Roses, and Iron Maiden's not known to be playing in the United States. They play in Europe a lot, and they play a lot of arenas, and they're very well received there. Guns N' Roses, obviously, you just saw them a couple of years ago. But evidently, Iron Maiden and Guns N' Roses played over 5 hours on Friday night, but didn't play any of their hits. They did more of an introspective feel to their music where they were just playing deep cut after deep cut. Obviously, there were a lot of peripheral fans that weren't huge Iron Maiden or Guns N' Roses fans that were just there for the festival like you have whenever you have an open air, something like this. But a lot of fans weren't happy. I wanted to get your thoughts. I remember seeing Warren Zevon, of all people, down at Work Play. And I also saw, who was it I saw down there? I forget the other artist I saw, maybe Stephen Stills, where it was just an intimate setting and they decided they didn't want to play their hits. Warren Zevon didn't play Werewolves of London, which of course was his big song. He's like, I don't play it anymore. It's not what I'm about. And obviously fans were dismayed by that. Your thoughts on that? When you show up to a show, what do you expect to hear?
Well, if Warren Zevon didn't have Werewolves of London, what did he have?
Yeah. Lawyers, Guns, and Money. Yeah.
Because of Werewolves of London.
Yeah.
And you're well past your prime, and I want to go show you that I love that song and thought you were great. And I remember the time when I was driving in that car with my buddies and that song, and that before that football game, that after that game, that we were going on that trip, and then you don't play it?
Yeah.
I can't stand it. Now, I do think this. You know, you've been talking about that concert, but for like 8 months.
Yeah.
And I hate we couldn't go.
I know, right?
Man, if Guns N' Roses or especially Iron Maiden didn't play their hits, that would be a bummer. And I do think it's kind of cool when people play, when they cover somebody else's hit.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. I'm into that. I don't want to hear a whole show of it. Like, I don't want to hear Guns N' Roses go play all AC/DC songs, though that would be kind of cool, actually. But you know, this is not classic rock, but a great performer. I took my wife to see Justin Timberlake 10 years ago or something, and he was awesome. And he played a couple of Elvis songs because he's from Memphis, and he played a couple of Michael Jackson songs because he was a huge Michael Jackson fan. He's got enough hits of his own at this point, you know, to fill up the show. But that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I've seen Zac Brown do that. He plays a few covers. I think that's kind of fun. A couple, give me a couple, but I don't, you know, I wouldn't want a whole show of it, but man, yeah, to go, Guns N' Roses had two albums that I didn't love, and it was Chinese Democracy, which took them an eternity to put out, like a decade or more to put that album. Might have been 2 decades to put that album out finally. And also The Great Spaghetti Incident, mm-hmm. which they did roll out in their prime. They had like one hit on that album. When I saw them, I want to tell you, they played like 4 songs from those 2 albums, and I didn't know any of them because I just didn't love the, I don't know why, I just didn't love those albums the way that I loved the other ones. And there was only one song they didn't play, which is the song Don't Cry, which I love. But so I wasn't bummed out that I didn't hear that one song, because everything else, man, they played their full catalog of hits.
Yeah.
But there was like 4 songs that I couldn't sing along with. I think part of going to the concert, right, is singing along with the artists and like my group and everybody around, we're all singing it. And that's part of the fun. Gosh, I'd be totally bummed. Like, I only know a few Iron Maiden songs. I kind of like Iron Maiden. I like the image of Iron Maiden. I like what they like. I totally respect their success, but I really only know a few songs. If they didn't play those few, I'd be out there like,
yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of fans were. I think they were there, obviously, in a perfect world, you loved all 6 bands that played. AC/DC obviously played 25 songs on Saturday night.
But they don't play Back in Black?
Yeah, exactly.
They don't play Thunderstruck?
They did. They played every single hit they had, man. I mean, they got after it. Yeah. Now, of course, they're waiting to find out if, in fact, they're going to be playing some more shows as they celebrate their 50th anniversary. So, great stuff, my friend. All right, my man, UABSports.com, UABSports.com for tickets and anything that's UAB. Go Blazers. Go get them this weekend against UTSA, and we'll catch them next week.
Yeah, man. Look, we got a big one against San Antonio this weekend, and we come back home and play Memphis for the Battle of the Bones, people.
There you go.
Don't forget, at 11 a.m. back here at Protective next week. Going to need you, because now one great thing, even though it is an early morning kick, Alabama and Auburn play later in the day. So mm-hmm. anybody that's out there listening that likes to catch those guys on TV, I get it. That's cool. But please come support the Blazers and bring your friends. You can still get home in time to see both of those games after you cheer for us, too. So hoping for the best. And we got basketball right around the corner.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
All right, man. Thanks, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.